Okay, so this is our second session on the Rambam's Akdama LaPerek Chelek, which deals with other things, the topic of Olam Haba, the world to come. We saw last time we had, by way of introduction, we saw last time the Rambam using this Mishnah as his springboard. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin says, Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelek LaOlam Haba, all Jews, the entire nation of Israel, have a share in the world to come. Mishnah doesn't define what the world to come is, and we therefore can all superimpose our notions of what that might be on the Mishnah until we do the hard work of figuring out what the real meaning is. And then the Mishnah lists, Elu she'en lehem chelek le'olam haba. In the typical Mishnaic fashion, you make a statement, and then you state a rule: all Jews have a share in the world to come. And then you explain the exceptions to the rule. The following people lose their share in the world to come. Now the Rambam in this is the Rambam, this begins the Rambam's commentary here, where he says, "Ra'iti ledaber kan bi'ikarim rabim be'emunot." I think it's appropriate to speak about matters of faith, matters related to faith, matters of great high import. This little aleph in the text, chapter aleph or section aleph, is a modern convenience. In the Rambam's text, the text itself is not divided into chapters or into subsections. Anything, and in the different modern editions of this text, it's broken into paragraphs. Although not all of the editions agree on exactly how to break it up into paragraphs or into chapters, as it were. This edition that we're using, although everybody I guess agrees that the beginning starts with Aleph. I guess it's a question about where it ends. This edition that we're using, the edition of Rav Shilat from Male Adumim, so we're here referring to Piska Aleph, to section 1. Last time we saw this first paragraph, the Rambam points out that there are many well-intentioned, otherwise good, righteous Jews who do the right thing, they keep Torah and mitzvot, and they have certain notions about Olam Haba, about what the world to come is. He's about to outline five different notions, five different schools of thought, all of which are subscribed to by good, righteous people. These are not sinners, these are not apikorsim, but they're all mistaken. They're all mistaken. This is a theme which the Rambam refers to a number of times, both here and elsewhere, that in terms of matters of belief, sometimes even the members of our team, they get it wrong. And not just a few people, but it could be that the majority of people either have faulty understandings or really gross misunderstandings about what the true belief is. And tonight we're going to outline these five opinions. It's really four plus one. You'll see the fifth opinion is a type of eclectic combination of the previous four. These different opinions about what Olam Haba is, but you have to remember that the Rambam is telling us from the beginning that he's presenting these ideas, a catalog of mistaken beliefs, but this is not, according to the Rambam, these are not the authentic Jewish beliefs. So we're going to start by way of doing that. As we start again, I'll just ask you all to please, if you have it, to please put on your webcams. Oh my goodness, I see that Dick Fiedler is on. I haven't seen you in years. It's nice to see you. Are you joining us from America, or are you here in Yerushalayim? Let me give you the mic. I'm sorry, Dick.
Yeah, no, I'm in the Boca right now.
You're in Boca.
You're shortly through Boca for that.
Okay. Well, it's nice to see you. Okay. So again, everybody else, if you have your webcam, please turn it on. If, as we go along, you'd like to ask a question, feel free to send it in the chat. You can send it into the chat to me privately, and only I'll see it. You can send it to everyone. Or you can raise your hand. You can click raise your hand on the participant panel, and I'll call on you, and I'd really actually prefer that. I'd like to hear your voices. The Rambam says, Hine, kat achat ta'amin. One group, the first group, a kat means a group. Sometimes it can also mean a sect, which has a certain pejorative sense to it. I don't think that's what he means here. I think he means a group, a kfutsa. One group of people will believe, in regard to Olam Haba, ki hatova amnan hi gan ve'eden. That Olam Haba is this notion of the Garden of Eden. V'chihu makom shiachlu bo v'yishtu mibli amal guf mibli yagia. That after death we go to Gan Eden, we go to the Garden of Eden. It's a place where we'll eat and we'll drink, but we won't have to work. We won't have to physically exert ourselves. V'shiyia bo batim yavanim yikarot. We'll live in houses of precious stone, houses made of emeralds and diamonds and rubies, umatzot meshi, silk sheets, silk mattresses, v'naharot moshchei yayin ushmanim tovim. Wine will flow from the faucet, as it were. Rivers will flow with wine and fine oils, v'harbei mizeh hamin, and lots of this type of thought. V'chi hara'a, and this same group of people think that ra'a, right, as he's contrasting here tova and ra'a. So what's the picture of the good? The picture of the good is you're going to go and it's going to be, you know, minus the, that motif of the, pardon the expression, you know, the 70 virgins that the Islamic notion puts forth of what their promised reward is in the next world. Very similar, a lot of very, you know, physical pleasures, a lot of physical pleasures. I'll just say in parentheses, just like the Rambam is debunking certain mistaken notions that are widely held, it's important to remember that this is probably true for all religions, and it's not my purpose to now defend other religions, particularly some that have not been doing us any favors of late, but it's important to be truthful. That notion that in Islam, their picture of the world to come, the reward that the shahideen, the martyrs, the suicidal maniacs, that they're going off to the world to come. It could be that those folks that do these terrible things, it could be that's what they believe. But scholars of Islam and the authentic chachamim, or the authentic scholars and teachers of Islamic dogma, they'll also say things like the Rambam is saying, that's a kind of very simplistic, popular folklore, but it's not actually their belief system. But again, I'm not here to teach or to defend Islamic beliefs. But the Rambam is doing a similar type of thing here, where he says, look, there are people that think this is what the reward is. You lead a good life in this world, in the next world you go to Gan Eden, and Gan Eden is, you know, silk sheets and wine and good food and not having to work, and I think that's what a lot of people That's what a lot of people imagine, says the Rambam. And Ra'a, the picture of evil, the picture of bad, the picture of punishment, would be Gehenom. Gehenom is a word for a place which usually translates as hell. And we all know what that picture of hell is. V'chi hu makom yukad esh. Fire. Hot. Yisrfu bo agufot. You get burned up. V'yitanu bo b'nei adam b'minei inu yerech bi'uram. And you're physically punished and afflicted. V'zu hatat tavi ra'aya al zot emunah b'ma'amarim rabim m'ma'amarei chachamim alayim ha'shalom. And what's the problem, says the Rambam? He exposes to us it's a problem with our own system. Because the entire corpus of Jewish literature, from the Chumash, the Navi, the Ketuvim, the Mishnah, the Gemara, everything that's been written up until now, says the Rambam, in the 12th century, and for us, we can add on another 800 plus years of bookshelf space. Since there's so much discussion about these matters, and since so much of what's been said and written is within the realm of the mashal, the metaphorical, the descriptive, which is not meaning to be literally precise. So you're always able to point to something, to some source. You're always able to pull some source out of your hat from the authentic sources and point to it and use it to justify your belief. Right? This group, Tavi Ra'aya al Zota Emunah, they could bring proof for this belief from a variety of sources from our sages. Asher Chayecha. It's hard to translate Chayecha. It's an exclamative. It's kind of like saying, the Rambam wouldn't have said this, but it's like saying, Oy Gevalt! Oh, wow! Yatu Pshatehem L'Tahanatam. Oleruba. And those sources which they'll point to will apparently justify their point of view, the simple reading of those sources. Again, the Rambam is trying to be clear. It's not a correct reading, right? But it might be the literal reading of sources that are meant to be understood in a different way, metaphorically, symbolically. But if you read them literally, you can justify virtually any position. That's the problem with, it's the richness of our tradition, but it's also the potential problem that here and there are pitfalls where somebody can manipulate a source to justify a mistaken view. That's the first category of people. Let's go on and visit the other four. Hold on a second, let me turn the page. Kat Shnia Ta'amin V'Tachshov. The second group will believe and think. Ki HaTovah HaMiyuchelet Amnan Hi Yemot HaMashiach. The second group will say, no. The promised reward, the good to which we are all anticipating, is the days of the Messiah, the Messianic era, Mehera Yegale, may they speedily be upon us. Sheba'oto azman yebnei adam kulam milachim tmidiim. And what's going to happen when Mashiach will come? Everyone will be a king. Everyone will be, it'll be great for everyone. We'll all be living the good life, living high. V'yatzmu gufoteihem, everybody will be strong. V'yoshivu ha'aretz kula la'ad. V'oto ha'mashiach yeh lefi machshavtam k'netzach habore. And it'll be People will live for eternity. Yitromam shivcho. V'shebeotozman tatzmiach haaretz bigadim arugim. And what will happen during Yimot HaMashiach? Everyone will be strong. Everyone will be like a king. It'll be a miraculous time. The laws of nature as we know them will be suspended, so that clothing, fully woven clothing, will sprout up from the ground. You won't need to go shopping anymore. You know, they just opened a Gap. You know the Gap? You know the Gap. The Gap just opened in Yerushalayim. They opened a few stores in Israel. There's a Gap that opened right outside of Shar Tzion. Like, you can walk from the Gap to the Kotel in 4 minutes. So, you know, maybe they thought they were positioning themselves for Yemot HaMashiach will come. Everyone will come to Eretz Yisrael. We'll build the Beit HaMikdash. And, you know, the big day kahuna will be, they'll have a logo on it that'll say from the Gap. So maybe the Gap people were misinformed. Maybe the Gap people were misinformed. But this group, the Katashnia, they think you won't even need the Gap. You won't even need to buy clothing, because in Yemot HaMashiach, clothing will just grow on trees. V'lechem afui. And bread will, whole baked loaves will sprout up from the earth. V'nimnaot rabot ke'elu. And other impossible things such as this. I'm going to come back to this idea of the clothing and the bread growing on trees in a second, or sprouting up the earth. V'hara'ahi. And punishment, the conception of punishment for this group is shelo yeh adam ba'oto azman v'lo yizkeh l'roto. So if you're good, you'll be around for Yemot HaMashiach, and you'll be a king, and you'll want to eat dinner, you'll go out, you'll pick it right off the tree, like something out of Willy Wonka. You won't have to cook, you won't have to trouble yourself, you won't have to buy things. Everything you need will be provided. Maybe that's what this notion is, that the clothing and the bread sprout ready-made from the ground. And the punishment is simply that you won't be part of it. You got to be in it to win it. You can't, you know, if you're not there, if you don't get an admission card, we talked about this last time, the OHEE, if you fail the Olam Haba entrance exam, so you're not there. V'yaviu raya al ze gam kein b'mamarim rabim mitzuyim l'chochamim v'ketuvim min ha-mikra yaskimu pashteyam etanatam ole kitzata. And he says, similarly, this group can point to this source here, this source from the Navi, or this source from Chazal, and a literal reading of those sources might support such a view. Now, where does the Rambam get this notion? I mean, where does the Rambam get this notion that, you know, where do we see this idea of the ultimate reward being a time when your clothing and your bread are going to sprout up from the ground? Anybody have any idea where this comes from? Right, so Raphael Yehoshaphat says from Gan Eden, but in the Torah it doesn't say that that's what Gan Eden was like. Where do we get the idea that that's what Gan Eden was like? I mean, Raphael, you're right that in the time of Adam HaRishon, in Gan Eden, there is this idea that that's what it was like. The Torah, the Chumash, we just read a couple weeks ago, Parshat Bereshit, 2 weeks ago, Parshat Bereshit does not mention that. But that idea exists in Chazal, that that's what it was like in Gan Eden. And the idea of this second group, that Yemot HaMashiach It will similarly be like that is obviously a notion that we want to return to what it was like in Gan Eden, or at least we want to return to what the Midrashic idea of Gan Eden was like. So my question really is, where does the Midrash get that idea? Like, where do Chazal get this idea that that's what life in Gan Eden was like? Does anybody have any idea? It's based upon a reading of a pasuk in Parshat Bereshit. So I'll tell you here from these psukim in Bereshit Perek Gimel, after the chait of the Eitz Hadat, after they eat from the fruit, so Hashem punishes the three of them. The Nachash, the snake, is punished. Chava is punished. And Adam is punished. Adam Arishon is punished. So the punishment is, Ula Adam Amar, Hashem says to Adam, Ki shamata lakol ishtecha, v'tochal min ha'etz, asher tziviticha lemor lo tochal mimenu, since you ate from the fruit which I told you not to eat, here's your punishment. Arura ha'adama ba'avurecha. The land will be cursed for you. But it's avon to ochlena, kol yemei chayecha. And only through your struggle, through your labor, will you be able to eat from it all the days of your life. The earth will sprout up thorns and thistles. V'achalta et esev hasadeh. B'ze'at apecha tochal lechem. Through the sweat of your brow will you eat your bread. Will you eat your bread. So in other words, the Torah didn't really describe how Adam Arishon, how in Gan Eden, I mean, in reality, they spent only a very short amount of time there. But the Gan Eden plan, the Torah doesn't exactly specify how they would have gotten bread. I mean, we know that there are these trees, and they can eat from them, which I assume means fruit. I mean, the pshat seems to say, what do you eat off of trees? You eat fruit. Except for that one tree which you're not allowed to eat from. It doesn't say what kind of work he had to do. It says la'avda u'leshamra. It says that Adam had to guard and work the garden, but it doesn't specify exactly. And since the punishment is that now gardening means you have to weed your garden, because there's coats for dardar, that it's not so simple, that working the land becomes harder, and b'ze'at apecha tochal lechem, since only through the sweat of your brow do you have to eat. So the Midrash, here in Bereshit Rabbah, it reminds us that how do we eat bread? How do we eat bread? It's like a question. How do we say, hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz. The bracha for bread, which I trust everybody knows, is a little strange and also a little bit inaccurate. If you want to eat an apple, you say, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Borei Pri Ha'etz. Right? We're thanking God that He made the fruit of the tree. You wanna have a tomato, Borei Pri Ha'adama, the produce of the ground. It comes to bread, you say, Hamotzi lechem min haaretz. That God brings forth the bread from the land. So it seems a little imprecise. Because He doesn't bring the bread from the land. He brings the wheat from the land. We take the wheat, and there's this whole long slew of things that you have to do to convert wheat into bread. You have to harvest the wheat, you have to thresh the wheat, you have to separate the wheat, the grain from the chaff, it has to be ground, it has to then be mixed with water and kneaded, it then has to be baked, etc. There's a lot of different steps. These are the malachot. These are the basis for many of the malachot, the things that we're not allowed to do on Shabbat. So it doesn't mean hamotzi lechem min haaretz. So the Midrash has this idea that the original plan before the curse, before the expulsion from Eden, was that everything sprung up from the ground. Right? That bread grew right there on the stalk of wheat. Right? You get a whole you wanted a bagel, you went outside, you picked your bagel off the tree. You wanted rye bread, you wanted, maybe it was all whole wheat, I don't know. But it was all there, it was all ready. And the curse becomes, according to the Midrash, the curse becomes, Bize'ata pecha tochal lechem. Well, now you want to eat bread, Adam? Now you're going to have to work for it. You're going to have to do all those steps in between. So this idea, I mean, Raphael is right, the idea comes from Adam HaRishon and Gan Eden, except the Torah doesn't say that. You have to read it in between the lines through the eye of the Midrash, that since after the expulsion from Eden, you have to... you have to get it through the sweat of your brow, you have to really, really work at it. Beforehand, it must have come without any effort. And if the bread grew from the ground, so then maybe the Rambam is saying that's also the idea of clothing growing from the ground. Maybe that's related to the idea that in Gan Eden, they didn't have clothing. And in Gan Eden, when they get clothing prior to leaving it, Hashem gives it to them in the form of the Alei HaTe'ina, that the first clothing mentioned in Tanakh are these fig leaves, which are literally grow on trees. So maybe the Midrash is kind of working on these ideas. Sherry asks the question, so then what was the command prior to the sin? What was the command La'avda u'lashomra? So there are different explanations. Raphael puts one in the chat. Rabbi Bravender actually gave a wonderful shir on it last year, I think, for Parshat Bereishit. I can send you the link to that, and you can listen to that online. But I'm not gonna go into that now. So I think that's what the Rambam is playing off of, and where he gets this idea that that's what people think the ultimate reward is. The ultimate reward is we're going to go back to that state of being, have all of our needs provided for, and that's what reward is. And if that's what reward is, then punishment is the absence of it. I just posted a link in the chat to a recording of Rabbi Bravender's shir on La'avda u'lashamra, which you can listen to online. You can download from that website. Katashlishit tachshov, the third group, thinks, ki hatovah hamiyuchelet hi tchiyat hametim. The third group thinks that ultimate reward is the revival of the dead. Now, be clear. We believe in the revival of the dead. We daven for it every day, three times a day in Shmoneh Esrei. Mechaye metim atah rav lehoshia. Right? We believe that those that are not with us, when Mashiach will come, will live again. What that exactly means, how it exactly works, we're going to talk about in a subsequent session. Because the Rambam is not perfectly clear on what he means by this, and it actually got him into a bit of trouble, because there were people that thought that the Rambam did not believe it or not, there are people that thought that the Rambam did not fully or properly believe in Tchiyat HaMetim, and he had to clarify his position on the matter, and we'll talk about that very interesting historical chapter at some point in the coming weeks. But the Rambam says there are people that think that the ultimate reward is Tchiyat HaMetim. Sheyichyeh Adam Achar Moto. that people will live after they have died. V'yachzor liyot im b'nei beito v'krovav, and you'll come back, you'll be with your loved ones and family. Yochal v'yishtev v'lo yamudot, you will eat, drink, be merry, and not die again. That's the key point, which the Rambam is criticizing. They think that what's the ultimate reward is that, you know, you're dead, you're going to come back to life. What happens to people that are alive when Mashiach comes? Bezus Hashem, Mashiach is going to come right now. So I'm not dead. Do I have to have Tchiyat HaMetim? Is Tchiyat HaMetim just a technical mechanism by which we bring back the people that are not alive at the time of Yemot HaMashiach? Or is it, do I have to die and come back? This is a question which is not perfectly clear. But for the Rambam, there's more to the ultimate reward than Tchiyat HaMetim, than resurrection of the dead. V'hara'a, the evil, the bad, the punishment would be Shelo Yichye, that somebody would not be resurrected because they're a sinner, because they're not worthy of it. And the Rambam points out that this group could also obviously point to sources to justify their beliefs. Now again, let me clarify. The Rambam does not deny Tchiyat HaMetim. He says that people that believe that Tchiyat HaMetim is the ultimate reward are missing the picture. What's the full picture? We still yet have to explain. Katar vi tachshov. Ki hatova asher niskela b'kiyum ha-mitzvot. The fourth group thinks that the ultimate tova, the ultimate good, the ultimate reward which we will merit through keeping the mitzvot, he nachat haguf. We could all use a little nachat haguf, a little rest, a little R&R, rest and relaxation. Miluya tikvot ha'olamiyot b'olam hazeh, the fulfillment of all of our worldly desires, all of our worldly hopes in this world. Kituv ha'aretz, v'rov ha'mamon v'abanim, that everything should be good for us. We should have parnasa, we should have children, we should have health, wealth, arichot yamim, a good long life, b'riut haguf, physical health, bitachon, we should dwell in security, meaning we shouldn't be worried somebody's going to come and rob us, or beat us up, or attack us, v'yot ha'malchut b'kirbenu, that we should have sovereignty, that we should have a melech, that we should be our own people. V'hachni'enu et oivenu, that our enemies should be subdued. V'chi hara'a asher timtsenu im na'avor, and the punishment for transgressing would be the opposite of this. Hefachelu anyanim, the opposite of all this. Kimatzav sha'anu bo bizmanenu zeh, kind of like, the Rambam says, kind of like what things are like now. What are things like now in the 12th century? Well, we don't have that. We don't always have nachar aguf, and we don't always have health, and we don't always have wealth, and we certainly don't have malchus, we certainly don't have Jewish people controlling the Jewish people, making decisions for ourselves, and our enemies are certainly not subdued. On the contrary, so you can understand if this is the belief that people have about what the ultimate good is, then the idea that we should return to Eretz Yisrael and the Jewish sovereignty, that the Jewish control over Jewish affairs and the Jewish country would be viewed as a positive, not only a positive historical step, but a positive theological step. It's clear what the source for that is. But the Rambam is clear. The Rambam would like all of these things. The Rambam thinks that good people who do mitzvot should get these things. But he's objecting to the idea that this is the definition of the ultimate good. That this is the definition of Olam Haba. And similarly, this group could point to sources which would justify their position. Vekata Chamishit, the fifth group, Vehi Harov, which is the majority of the Jewish people, the majority of what he called Anshei HaTorah, people of the Torah, not Chachamim, not scholars, but good, nice, good Yidden, Techaber Bein Elu HaDvarim Kulam. They're going to take a pastiche. They're going to build an eclectic worldview based upon pieces of all four of the previous positions. V'tomar ki hamiyuchal hu sheyavo hamashiach v'yichye hametim. Right? They say that what happens? What's the ultimate reward? Messiah will come, revival of the dead, v'yikansu leGan Eden, we'll all then be in Gan Eden. What happens in Gan Eden? Yachlu sham v'yishtu, all those great physical benefits. Good food, good drinks, nice houses, high-definition TV. The Rambam probably wouldn't mind us updating the list. V'yu bri'im kimei hashamayim haaretz. Kind of like, you know, a Chinese menu. Choose something from each category. So the Rambam says these are the five. This is the menu of the five positions on what the ultimate reward, the purpose of doing mitzvot in this world are. And the Rambam is disturbed by this. What do you think is problematic with any or all of these? What's the common thread in all of them to which the Rambam is objecting? Does anyone have any thoughts on that? Think about it for a moment. What's the common thread to all of these different positions? Come on, folks, it's not a pre-recorded shiur, you have to think. See, if somebody turns their camera off, they think it means I'm not going to call on them. Okay. So I think that all of them, there's an emphasis in all of these approaches on physical reward. On physical reward. Now, the idea of schar va'onesh, of reward and punishment, is obviously central to our beliefs. So much so that a little later on, a few pages down the way in this work, when the Rambam lists the 13 cardinal principles of faith, denial of any one would be sufficient to not get you into Olam Haba, whatever Olam Haba is. He hasn't defined it yet. He's just told you what it's not. One of those 13 is the notion of schar va'onesh, that we believe in reward and punishment. We believe, like we say in the Yigdal, gomel ish chesed, Gomel ish chesed kimifalo, noten l'rasha rash kirishato, that the righteous are rewarded, the wicked are punished, that there's consequences to our actions. That is a yisod ha-yisodot, one of the yisod ha-yisodot. right? Without schar va'onesh, there's so many other principles that are tied up with it. Free will. One of our cardinal beliefs is that we have free will. If we study, I think in the past, some of us have studied together the Rambam's Hilchot Tshuva. If you read the Hilchot Tshuva, it's woven into both implicitly and in a number of places explicitly, the notion that there's free will, that we are free agents, that we're not robots. It's a question. The Rambam does not count free will as one of the 13 principles of faith. So how could that be, since he speaks about it so powerfully? So a number of commentators have suggested that free will, it doesn't have to be listed as one of the 13, because it's built into the whole notion. If you don't believe in free will, reward and punishment is meaningless. Or you can't believe in reward and punishment unless it's predicated on the idea that we have free will. Because if we don't have free will, then reward and punishment, you can't get punished, right? You can't get punished if you didn't have a choice in the matter. Punishment only has meaning, reward actually only has meaning, if it's coming based upon a choice that was made. But if there was no choice, if we're just robots, so then why do you have to reward? What's the incentive to reward, and what's the disincentive of being threatened by a punishment? So schar va'onesh, reward and punishment, is a foundational principle in Tanakh, in Chazal. The Rambam is disturbed by the idea. The Rambam is nevertheless still disturbed by the idea that the purpose of doing mitzvot, or the purpose of avoiding averot, is motivated by schar va'onesh. Is motivated by schar va'onesh. Right? Raphael asks, didn't the Ramban also speak about reward and punishment? Yes, of course, all of the great Jewish thinkers spoke about reward and punishment. The Ramban also has an important work about reward and punishment, as well as, of course, addressing it in lots of other places. The Rambam goes on here and says, "V'amnam ze'ach chidusha nifla." This is the great, important, innovative message I'm trying to make. Ritzoni lomar, ha'olam haba, olam haba. What do we know olam haba is? We know it's not any one of the five things that we've just listed and discounted. Ma'at timtza bechlal mishi aleihu al da'ato. Unfortunately, he says, you're going to go out and look and do a survey, you're going to find very few people that really have a clear idea of what the actual true Jewish belief is. Right? V'haim hu hatachlit, o achat min hadeot hakodmot hu hatachlit. Tachlit, or as we say kind of colloquially in Yiddish, tachlis, tachlit, can mean one of two things. It can either mean a goal, right? Like we say colloquially, like when people are dating, they're dating for tachlis. They're dating with a certain goal. They want to get married, right? Or colloquially, if you're talking, and you're like, imagine two people are negotiating something, and they're each like, stating hypothetical positions about something, and finally somebody's gonna wanna, he just wants to end the conversation, he's gonna say, okay, tachlis, but what do you want? right? Meaning, you know, what's the bottom line? Like, you know, what are you willing to settle for in this negotiation? But tachlit can also mean something else. It can mean like the ultimate. Like tachlit from the Lashon of kol, right? Like from the same sense of vayechulu hashamayim v'haaretz, right? That God completed the work of creating the heaven and the earth, right? That he brought it to its ultimate conclusion. So here the Rambam is talking about tachlit, the purpose of doing mitzvot. The purpose of doing mitzvot in the sense of what the ultimate end is. The final, the great reward. So he says, what's the ultimate reward? V'yavdil bein ha-tachlit u'bein ha-siba ha-mivia el ha-tachlit. We have to differentiate between the ultimate reward and the conditions that get us there. We can't get confused between ends and means. V'lo timtza klal mi she yishal b'zeh o yidaber po v'amnam yishalu b'nei adam kulam ha'amon v'ayichidim heich yakumu ha'metim. So what's going to happen? He's like crying, the Rambam. He's crying. He says, look, I'm trying to talk about what the ultimate purpose of life is, what the ultimate purpose of our beliefs are, of our rituals, of our mitzvot. And you go around and you talk to people about Schar Va'onesh and Olam Haba, etc. And what happens? These are the kinds of questions you get. Hech yakumu hametim? People will ask a question like this. They'll say, like, when the dead will be resurrected, how will they look? Arumim o levushim? Will they be naked or will they be dressed? And if they're dressed, hayim ba'otam ha'begadim be'enam asher nikberu bahem yakumu berikmatam v'tziram v'yofi tviratam o b'malbushi chaseh otam bilvad. So what are they going to be wearing? Like, are they going to be wearing the clothes that they were buried in? And if it's the clothes they were buried in, are they going to, like those clothes, are they going to be dry cleaned before they get resurrected? Because, you know, clothing tends to get a little worn out in the grave. Or will they be wearing something else? V'kasher yavoa mashiach, ha'im yashveh ben ha'ashir v'ani, will everybody, will the rich and the poor be equal? O yeh b'yamin, b'yamav chazak v'chalash, so the Rambam says, look, this is what the level of conversation is like. People are interested in these kinds of things. The Rambam says we have to get past that. Now, these are interesting questions. I mean, I don't discount the idea that these are interesting questions. And important questions. And people might have these questions. And other people discuss them. I'm not going to get into that. I thought to discuss some of these topics. I'm going to skip it now because it's getting late. But the Rambam says it misses the point because we're confusing the ends and the means. And the end, the tachlit, the ultimate discussion is what is the purpose of doing the mitzvot? So if we understand the purpose of doing the mitzvot, so then we'll understand what the ultimate reward is. Now, it could be that physical reward and being absolved of having to deal with all types of problems in this world is a benefit which allows you to do mitzvot. But that is not the ultimate reward. Even the resurrection of the dead is not the ultimate reward. And for the Rambam, that's not what Olam Haba is. We'll see that the Rambam, who again believes that there is the resurrection, that there will be the resurrection of the dead when Mashiach will come, says that's not the final step. For the Rambam, there's a differentiation between what he calls the Olam HaTchiyah and Olam Haba. That there's even more beyond that. The ultimate reward does not involve physical pleasures. What does it involve? We will have to learn in a subsequent time. In the next chapter, in chapter Bet, in Perek Bet, the Rambam enters this discussion of what the point of doing mitzvot is. Because if we understand the point of doing mitzvot, we'll have a clearer idea of what the reward, the ultimate reward is for doing that. And the Rambam develops a famous mashal, a famous parable about education and how people are meant to be brought from one level to another level to another level of understanding, so that they evolve into the types of people that they ought to be, the types of Jews who do mitzvot lishma. And this idea of doing mitzvot lishma of doing mitzvot lishma, or lishman, for the sake of the mitzvah, we know about this idea of Torah lishma, of studying Torah lishma, for doing them for, well, we'll have to define what that means, but let's say, for the sake of the mitzvah itself, that is the topic. Eliyahu asks, how do we differentiate between simplification for the purpose of education and misinformation? That's an excellent question. The Rambam is going to get into it. It may have something to do with, is it part of a larger process? Say, the Rambam didn't speak the language of curriculum, but we'll have to get into that next time. But that question predicates, or the Rambam's discussion is predicated on that question. I mean, obviously, your question is based upon the idea that when we're explaining something, particularly let's say to children or to somebody who's not initiated, you don't always explain the whole picture because it's overwhelming. So we simplify things. That's not the same as misinformation. Although, if we were to allow the child to continue their whole life thinking that, we would be doing a gross disservice. Can anybody give an example of this, either from their own education or from something else? It doesn't have to be from Torah, per se. It could be from a different discipline. This is true for all disciplines, certainly in mathematics. Can anybody give an example? Okay, well, think about that, and we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it next time. Alan says, oh, okay. Okay, we will continue next week.